Inside Education with me, Sean Delaney, on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Inside Education brings you ideas and inspiration for teaching and learning each week, all from an Irish perspective. You can listen back to 367 previous episodes of Inside Education, more than one for every day of the year, by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the Podcasts tab. This week on the programme, I'm delighted to bring you the second part of my interview with Professor John P. Jack Miller from the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education at the University of Toronto. Professor Miller is an expert on holistic education, and on last week's programme he told us about the intellectual roots of holistic education, about integrated curricula, and what holistic education is like in practice. At the end of last week's programme, Jack Miller explained that spiritual intelligence helps us discriminate between reality and fantasy, noting that spirituality includes a realm beyond words, and so we must remain open to the mystery of life. I then asked him if that brought us into the area of beliefs. This was his response.
I put more emphasis on practice than belief. Because sometimes if the belief becomes too, if it becomes an ideology, that ideology is preventing you from direct experience. So if you have too many strongly held beliefs, those can actually be a prison. And the whole idea is to develop your awareness and openness. Like, again, Suzuki Roshi talked about the Zen mind, beginner's mind. The beginner's mind is very soft and open to experience. And on the other hand, he said the mind of the expert is like closed and it's like, you know, knows everything. And I think the beginner's mind is a beautiful image for holistic education. We want to keep... Not that we're like, of course we gain knowledge and wisdom through experience, but we don't want to close ourselves off from this openness to experience and to wisdom. So that I think is important. Yeah.
There's an Irish poet that I think of in light of that, and he says, he talks about the wonder that was in every stale thing when we looked at it as children.
Yes, exactly. That's the kind of the Blake thing, right? You know, could see the universe in a grain of sand sort of thing. So we have beliefs for sure, but we should, you know, like from a Socratic point of view, we should always be examining them.
And in the United States, there's very strict separation between church and state.
Yes, yes.
And is that the same in Canada?
Not really. No, we don't have that same rigid boundary. You know, I think there is still this idea that in a public school, you have to be very careful when you talk about religion and spirituality. And also, we haven't had the fundamentalism that is so strong in the United States. That those people have had such a strong influence on the dialogue about schools and what could go on in schools and that kind of thing. So here we have more of a notion of the school is part of our society, and children should be like exposed to a range of ideas and different beliefs. You know, that's part of our multicultural thing as well. So it's different. Yeah.
You've said you like Thomas Moore's book about the care for the soul.
Yeah.
What is the soul in your view?
Well, the soul is the unconditioned self. Like, you know, most in those spiritual psychological traditions, they talk about the conditioned self, which is the ego. That's all the conditioning that we've had in our life from our parents and our schooling and our society that has influenced our sense of who we are. But we also have this part that, again, in most like spiritual traditions is referred to, like, so in Buddhism, it's called the Buddha nature. Christ talked about the kingdom of God within you. The Hindus talk about the Atman. It's the unconditioned self. And that unconditioned self, when we experience that, we feel like this deep sense of connection to the universe and to all life. And so one of the Catholic saints, she said that the deepest part of me is God. Or that, in other words, the word that I like to use too is that it's a divine spark within each person. So I think so, again, a lot of holistic education is, first of all, making us aware that that exists within each human being and trying to nourish it. in ways that are not like dogmatic or whatever. But I think at the school that I mentioned, I think that they've actually, you know, again, one of the connections in the holistic curriculum is the soul connection. It's one of the six connections. So they've been very explicit about that they say, well, this is, you know, we're doing this in our school. We have this soul connection that we're trying to nurture. So that to me is what I understand to be the soul.
As someone who has dedicated most of your life to exploring these issues of holistic education and spirituality education, and you know, you're making the case in a culture where there's increasing emphasis on student achievement in tests and preparing them for the workplace, how do you make the case for holistic and spirituality education in that culture?
I think intuitively people respond to the idea of the whole person. I think so. That's what I talk about. And most parents, I mean, of course they want their child to learn the skills and all that, but they also want them to be happy. And happiness comes from having all these parts of yourselves being nourished. It doesn't come from just intellectual achievement. In fact, that causes suffering if you're just totally, you know, focused on that. And to, you know, and Gandhi said this. He said, you know, he used the head, the hand, and the hearts, which is just another image for what I'm talking about. And he said they form an indivisible whole. And if you focus on just one of those, and mostly it's been the head, he said you commit a gross fallacy. And I believe that our education has committed a gross fallacy. I think when you talk in those terms, people can understand that. Now, whether they feel strongly enough to like change the, you know, the ministry policies, that's a different thing. But I do see more now, because particularly there's so much talk now about mental health. And if you're going to be serious about that, that involves, again, approaching the whole person. You can't just talk about mental health in terms of the mind. It's got to be also the body and the spirit. So there is more. And I think the whole, like the rise of the mindfulness movement is a sort of counter to, you know, it's an encouraging thing as far as holistic ed is concerned.
You've spent a lot of time traveling abroad talking about these ideas. How are they received in different countries?
Well, again, in every country, there are a group of people that really are interested in this. But again, they're on the margins, right? They're not the mainstream people. But still, they're usually highly committed people. But at the same time, they're very open and very delightful people to work with. So I've done most of my work in Asia and mostly in Japan and Korea, some in Malaysia, and then I was in Hong Kong. And Thailand. And the thing is, those cultures, they have the roots of things like Buddhism and Taoism, and, you know, it's in the culture in different ways. And it's like pulling that out a bit and seeing how we can bring this into education. Particularly Japan, I mean, they have these things like the tea ceremony and the flower arrangement. All these come from this this tradition of awareness, right? And they respond to that. And again, there's a lot of interest in things like Waldorf education and Montessori in these cultures too. So you just try to build on that and just see how it can unfold, yeah.
How did your own interest in this area arise?
First of all, the word holistic education as a term didn't come into real being until the mid-1980s. So before, there were many, many terms, but probably the most common was humanistic education. But humanistic education did not really include the spiritual. It was about like self-esteem mostly. But you had other terms too, like confluent education was like bringing the emotion and the intellect together. And another one's called affective education, which is development of the emotional life. My first book was called Humanizing Education, Models of Affective Education. So, and then And then there was a term briefly called transpersonal education, which really was focusing on the spiritual. That was like in the late 70s. But none of those terms, you know, particularly that term didn't just, it was too esoteric, you know. But the holistic term really caught on and I think is a much more powerful term and includes. And today, one of the things I really noticed in the last 10 or 15 years that people are using that word holistic way beyond, you know, in so many situations. So many people today are talking, well, let's approach this problem holistically. Let's get the broadest kind of, so I think that is a real change in again, how people are viewing things. But they still, in terms of education, you're still kind of reluctant to do it, yeah.
And who popularized the term in the 80s?
Well, there were two things happened in 1988. One was there was a holistic ed review that was started by Ron Miller, and I wrote a book called The Holistic Curriculum that was published in 1988. And I think those two things were were very important. I mean, there were other things going on too. There was a group, it was called the Global Alliance for Transforming Education, but again, they didn't use holistic in terms of that title. So I, you know, like particularly Ron Miller, the Holistic Ed Review, which he published on his own. But that had a big influence at the time, right? It was really important. So by the way, the Holistic Curriculum, which was the first edition was published in 1988, and it's been in print since then. There's going to be a new edition coming out in May, and the difference in that edition is that it includes all this example from the Equinox School, because to show how at least one school has been able to do this. Also, there's a stronger emphasis on Indigenous education in that book, too. So I'm really happy that book, I think that to me, and I probably, in terms of my work, that's the book that it'll probably most remembered for, because again, it's been in print so long. And it actually, I don't know if you ever remember the Whole Earth Catalog.
No.
The Whole Earth Catalog was a big kind of alternative. It looked at all kind of alternative things in our culture, right? Not just education, but eating and living and all those kinds of things. Anyway, the holistic curriculum, they picked that as one of the books in education that was like seen as important.
What's a typical working day like for you?
Well, I'm 75 now, so I'm half time now, so I'm slowing down a bit. I teach two courses a year, so a lot depends on, you know, if I'm teaching a semester or not. Like I've had a very busy, so I taught this semester in January to April and my course just finished. So I've been teaching that and doing a lot of stuff with different, I'm asked to do, like to be an external examiner on different theses, and I'm still on doctoral committees. I'm not taking on new doctoral students. I've supervised 40 doctoral students, mostly in the area of holistic ed, and they're all over the place. and that's one of the things that's kind of sad, that there's in higher education, you can't really do, they're starting to do like degrees in contemplative education. There's one at Simon Fraser, and there are some programs in the States, but there isn't really a program in holistic education at all the way up to a doctoral level. So I just hope that, again, if to have more of an interconnected approach to things, I just hope that will happen. It may not happen in my lifetime, but I really would like to see that happen.
In your view, what is school for, or what are schools for?
Well, I think ideally, and of course I go to my own example of the Equinox, it's to develop a whole person. And it's also to give them the skills to negotiate society. They need to be competent in the certain skills, but they don't have to be so competent that they pass all these standardized tests, right? People have different you know, from a holistic point of view, we talk about, or at least I do, that every person comes into life with a gift or a set of gifts. And that gift may not be reading and writing, but they have something to contribute to. So it may be something in the arts, or maybe something in something more practical, that our education should be a really nurturing that gift that they can then give to the world. So it should be much more open and flexible. And there are some schools, there's the Sudbury Valley School in Massachusetts, where that's their approach, right? The student, again, so they, like Summerhill, they have the choice of what classes they go to and all that, but the focus is that they need to find what they want to give their life to. So that's ideally what I think school should be.
Is there a teacher who had a significant impact on you?
Well, yeah, I've had several. They're mostly come from the spiritual realm. So first of all, the transcendentalists like Emerson and Thoreau, and I wrote a book on transcendental education where I talk about all those people. But also in my own life, Ram Dass, who's was originally called Richard Alpert, he went to India and he had a teacher, and he came back in the 70s and started writing books and teaching. He had a big effect on me at that time. But mostly it's been the meditation teachers that I've had. Joseph Goldstein was my first introduction to meditation. And then in here in Ontario, Norman Feldman has been my teacher for over like 25 years. So, but again, people like Thomas More have been my teacher, you know. Yeah, so
when you talk about a teacher for over 25 years, how often do you...
Well, he and his wife have run retreats here since the early 90s. Almost every year they did a retreat. And so I would, whenever they were doing a retreat, I would go. And so that's why, you know, that's why I say they're my teacher. They're more or less slowing down now. Like they haven't, they're doing a retreat in May, which I am planning on going to, but they don't do a retreat every year anymore. So I have to look at other ways to do retreats.
Who or what inspires you?
I would say early on, in terms of holistic education, Carl Rogers and Abraham Maslow, they founded a thing called humanistic psychology, which eventually became transpersonal psychology, which, you see, at that time, behaviorism and Freud and Freudian psychology were the two like main, and that's and their view of the human being is very, very limited. Well, particularly behaviorism. It's just like totally ignore the inner life. Like we're talking about people like Skinner and Thorndike. So as a counter to that, you had Carl Rogers and Maslow. So I was very inspired by their view of, and they wrote about education. Carl Rogers wrote a book called Freedom to Learn, and his work inspired me a lot too. And that was my thesis was based, my doctoral thesis, which I did here, was influenced by kind of a Rogerian. He talked about therapy and how what the therapist, the qualities of a good therapist, but they're the same as a good teacher, being genuine and empathetic and those kinds of things. So from the very beginning, I was, you know, those people inspired me, yeah.
Have you a favorite book or writer or blog about education?
Oh, that's hard. No, I don't think about education per se. No, I don't think I have one, right? Like,
Well, even I'm looking around here in your office and there's a fascinating range of books. My eyes are going up and down. What books do you find yourself going back to?
Okay. Yeah, so one would be the work of Thomas More. I'm very interested in Taoism now. The Tao Te Ching is a book, I mean, I've got it on my desk here. It's been very... Emerson's essays is something I go back to. Some of the writings of Thoreau. Those are...
That'd be Walden?
Walden, yeah. And his journals, you know, and his thing on civil disobedience. So those, you know, Parker Palmer, I think Moore's early work, it was a big influence on me. I'm trying to think of others. So again, more and more now Indigenous education. Gregory Catete, who is a Indigenous professor at the University of New Mexico, he wrote a book called Look to the Mountain, which is this beautiful description of Indigenous education, but it could also be a beautiful description of holistic education. And he's written the foreword to the holistic curriculum, because he talks about how the holistic curriculum and some of the work that I've done is so like congruent with Indigenous education, eh? So, and particularly there's an Indigenous educator from Canada, not an educator, but he was a writer, Richard Wagamese. He's written several books, but the one I like is called Embers. It's like a meditations, and it's just some beautiful, again, it's like this holistic philosophy that he talks about. So those are some of the people.
There's a book I read in the 1980s. I was introduced to it back then, The Creative Resolution of Conflict. Have you come across that? Yeah, it's
that
Tom Crum. And again, he, like you said, he used the art of Aikido.
Okay.
And you, as a metaphor for, choose to be centered and things
like that. Well, another person who back then was an influence, George Leonard, who also, he was a master of Aikido, but he also wrote a book called Education and Ecstasy in the 60s. It was a beautiful, inspiring like book. And it was so much 60s, right? It was so optimistic, and it was, and that was such a creative time in terms of education. I mean, the education system was really being severely like looked at, and there were all these free schools were set up, and that's one thing in Toronto that inspired the Toronto board to support the idea of alternative schools. So Toronto board is one of the leaders in having alternative schools, and they're like, I think, well over 20 alternative schools, both elementary and secondary, and there are 4,000 kids going to alternative schools in Toronto.
Are they like charter schools in the States?
No, because charter schools are like independent from, these are part of the school board. So they have to work within, the structure of the board. And so that, like, I've understand it, like those charter schools, I understand, again, how they function is different. And they can be a lot of turnover in staff and all that kind of thing. So here, a lot of these schools, they've had people that have been there as long as they've been teaching. So, I mean, there's some similarity that they have. They can develop their vision. So I think the charter schools can do that too. So, yeah.
And when you say alternative school, what other kinds of alternatives? I mean, obviously the holistic
one. Well, there's one for Black students. There's one for Indigenous students. There's just ones who provide a lot of freedom for kids to learn, right? Like when the Equinox School, there were two other schools started at that time. One was called the Da Vinci School. Both of them still exist. And that's a Waldorf-inspired public school. And then the other one, that I forget the name of it, but it has more of an ecological-like focus. So so that's a really positive thing. I'm not sure that I've really been lucky to work in Toronto and in Ontario generally. So a lot of these things can happen. Yeah.
And what does it take to start one? Is it a group of parents coming together?
It's more teachers and parents, and they have to develop a proposal to make to the board, and the board has to approve it. And so that's the whole process started in 2007. They developed a proposal, and again, they used a lot of my work to argue for it. And then they asked me to set up kind of advisory group that would help in terms of advising where the curriculum would go. And then the school started in 2009. Yeah.
And finally, Jack, if someone is interested in the idea of holistic education or spiritual education, how can they find out more about it? Where would you encourage someone to start?
Well, you start by reading. There's just so much to read, and again, if you want from a very practical point of view about what it is, I would suggest, again, looking at Waldorf and Montessori education and Reggio Emilia and all of that. If more from a theoretical point of view, I mean, my work and Rachel Kessler and Ron Miller, who is retired now from, he's not a relative, but he wrote a book, What Are Schools For? And then he wrote several other books on holistic education. They're definitely worth like reading. Yeah, yeah.
And your own book, The Holistic Curriculum, that's being republished, or a later edition of that is coming out in May.
In May, yeah, yeah. Okay. And then I've just, this book that, there's two other things that I would mention is I wrote a book that came out last year called Love and Compassion, Exploring Its Role in Education. And then we published this this handbook in holistic education that was came out in, it's actually, the date is 2019, but it was published last fall. And this has like 37 chapters, but 53 educators from around the world talking about different aspects of holistic education. We feel that this book was important in helping define the field, you know. I would say if I, and again, it has chapters on Montessori and Waldorf and indigenous education. If you're going to, you know, if you want to start just getting an overview of the field, I would suggest this book.
And I should say, you know, you go by Jack, but you're, as an author, you're John P. Miller.
That's right. That's right. That's my legal name. But, you know, like, my father was John, so in the family, to avoid confusion, they called me Jack. So people have always known me, my friends have known me as Jack, but I have to put John on the books, right?
So if you want to read more about today's guest, he writes under the name of John P. Miller, and he is from the Ontario Institute for Studies and Education at the University of Toronto. The third edition of Professor Miller's classic book, The Holistic Curriculum, has just been published. That's all we have time for in this week's programme. You can listen to or download this programme or hundreds of previous programmes by going to my website, seandelaney.com, and clicking on the Podcasts tab. You can read my thoughts about teaching in my book, published by Routledge, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, which is available to borrow from your local library or to purchase from online bookstores. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney wishing you well. Thank you for listening.